So tonight we celebrate the last meal that Jesus ate with his disciples and the commandment that he gives them to love one another. And then, of course, that commandment carries on to us because we also are disciples of Jesus. Probably many of us are at least somewhat familiar with the events of the last week of Jesus' life. Palm Sunday, he rode into town on a donkey, hailed as a king. The next few days were spent teaching, visiting with people, eating with them, and so forth. It was time to celebrate the Passover, when they commemorated God's passing over the homes of their ancestors, the Jewish people, prior to their fleeing from Egypt. It was an annual celebration that had some changes over the centuries, but always one of the highlights was a Passover dinner, or in the course of the week in many homes, there would be multiple Passover dinners. It wasn't just one necessarily, that a family might celebrate or neighbors might celebrate together and so forth. It's a fairly simple meal in terms of the quantity of food. Though the Passover meal had a variety of different things that were eaten, just none of them in large quantities necessarily, and always the same foods from one year to the next. Has everyone ever done, we tend to know it as the Seder dinner. Has anyone ever participated in a Seder dinner? None of you have, yeah. So you know a little bit about some of the things that happen at that. Each food item is intentionally chosen and symbolic in its meaning. And then around each food item, there was a, I guess you basically called a ritualized kind of call and response. Some of the table would be the leader, and the other people would know their part to say in response to what the leader said. And it'd be a few things, and then they would have call and response, and then eat and spend a little time chit-chatting maybe, and then go on to the next item where there's more call and response and so forth. And all of that was designed to remind them of their ancestors' flights and the freedom that God had delivered them into. It was kind of like a service, in many ways, gathered around a meal in each family's home. Well, Jesus celebrated that meal with his disciples on a Thursday evening. It was the last time he would eat with them. And at that meal, several important things happened. Probably many of us are familiar with this. First of all, Jesus took the bread and what was the final cup of wine for the evening. There were a few throughout the evening. And he gave them new meanings. Now, originally, the bread that was used and the cup had their old meanings that were derived from the original Exodus, right? So they wrapped around their freedom from slavery in Egypt. The bread was unleavened. That was what was taken with them when they left, when they took flight, so to speak. The wine represented the blood of the lamb that was painted on the doorposts of their homes before fleeing Egypt, that was passed over, preventing them from God's punishment that swept through the land. So that's kind of very briefly what the elements meant to them in that moment as they celebrated with Jesus. They're symbols of their freedom, their ancestors' freedom from Egypt, and now and theirs continuing in their relationship with God. But on this night, Jesus celebrates the Passover meal with the disciples. He gives the bread and wine as symbols of his body broken and his blood shed, communicating that he is a sacrifice for freedom from slavery to sin. He is the one that protects you. He's the one that gives you shelter. No one had ever said anything like this. And if they had, they were quickly written off as crazy and lost to history. Couldn't tell you who they are if everyone ever made such a claim. I would love to have been in the room on that evening as Jesus was there with the disciples, like a little fly on the wall, and just observe their faces as Jesus said this. I can only imagine the eyes would get as big as saucers, maybe some puzzled looks, maybe some of them had kind of light bulb, you know, if you could draw the little cartoon light bulb over their head, right? Just moments of like, oh, that's maybe, you know, connecting some dots on some things and so forth about who Jesus is claiming to be. Ultimately, it really is a claim to divinity, to equality with God. These are the elements that symbolize what God had done in the lives of their ancestors, and Jesus is saying, now that they represent me, it's my body that's broken and my blood that's shed. Jesus also said to them that he was giving them a new commandment. As I said at the very start of the service, that's where this word Maundy comes from, when it comes to Maundy Thursday. And the commandment is to love one another. For sure, Jesus' death on the cross is like the ultimate standard of sacrificial love. But he gives them an example that is a little more attainable, far less intimidating, and definitely more repeatable. Okay, he washes the disciples' feet, and we read about this in the gospel according to John. He's the only gospel writer that tells of this part of the evening. So this is sort of a practical example of Jesus' teaching to love your neighbor as yourself. He's putting it down to, you know, here's a way to do that. And even that love your neighbor as yourself is sort of a quick, like one-sentence synopsis of the Old Testament commandments that dealt with neighborly relationships, particularly the Ten Commandments. The second, is it the last six of the Ten Commandments, or last seven, six or seven of the commandments are about neighbor relationships and relationships with others in your family and so forth. Loving them as yourself is the way to kind of summarize that. And what makes it new is that they are to do so as Jesus has loved them. He sets this new standard and brings it back to love rather than just following an Old Testament law out of duty. That there's a whole new kind of motivation behind it. Loving like Jesus is this kind of stooping down, of humbling oneself to serve others. Now, here's one thing, one of the things that makes Jesus such an attractive leader, and I've said this kind of thing before, he doesn't just teach with words, he teaches by actions. And I think that's what a good leader does. Jesus lives what he asks the disciples to do. So he tells us to be baptized and to baptize others, and he himself is, right? He tells the disciples to carry their cross, though Simon of Cyrene does help Jesus carry his physical cross the next day. But so Jesus did that same thing in a very literal sense, and he invites us to do that. He tells us to preach the good news, and Jesus spent a lot of time preaching and teaching the good news, the gospel. Jesus never asks his followers there in person, through them, through scripture now to each of us. He never asks us to do something that he himself hasn't done or wouldn't do. So here Jesus tells them to love one another, to love as he does. And so he sets before them an example of love as he washes their feet. This might seem a little bit foreign to us in some ways. Not that you don't wash your feet, but you wash your own probably. Washing feet in their day was very common. This was a thing you did multiple times per day, most likely. Dusty roads and paths, open-toed sandals, you know, what we call lovingly Jesus sandals, Birkenstocks in particular, I guess, with the leather straps and so forth. That was their everyday sandal. They were just, I don't know, sandals. They weren't Jesus sandals. They were just sandals. And their feet got dirty and dusty. But to wash someone else's feet was a very menial task. Normally when you entered someone's home, they would have a basin and a towel right there by the entryway into the house, and you would wash your own feet upon entering. This was just standard protocol. Whenever you went over to somebody's house, this is what you would do. In a wealthy person's home, a servant might be there to do the job for you, and it was a pretty lowly job. It wasn't one that was a high-paying, high-ranking kind of job to have. So this was not some, you know, we see this as like this profound spiritual example of loving a neighbor, and it is. But for them in the moment, if you guys kind of put yourself in that moment, in that place for a moment, you're coming into this house or into this upper room, and your feet are dusty and dirty, and there's a bowl of water there with a towel, and Jesus, this guy you've been following around for the last 3 years, who's been your mentor and you believe is the Messiah, and if you don't only totally understand what it means that he's the Messiah, you don't quite have all the dots connected, he stoops down to wash your feet. It was probably a bit of an awkward moment for them in many ways. You know, Peter, we're probably, many of us are aware, Peter, you know, he says, no, he doesn't want it. I think he senses the awkwardness of this and the wrongness of it. And then after Jesus explains, he says, well, then wash all of me, right? So, but it's kind of backwards. We actually see more the right language reflected in the psalm that we read just before the verses from 1 Corinthians, where David cries out for God's mercy because he knows of God's love for him. He speaks of that in there. But David is the one who's the servant. David is the one who serves God, not the other way around. And so it's backwards here as Jesus stoops to serve them. He's doing this to demonstrate his love for them. And he washes even the feet of Judas, as far as we know. He washes the feet of Peter, who would deny him. Judas betrays him. And so Jesus gives them an example of love through service by washing their feet. Then within the next 24 hours or so, his crucifixion would really be, as I said, the ultimate example of his love and how we also can love one another sacrificially, but certainly goes to an extreme that you're not going to do more than once if you literally give your life for somebody. And as a foreshadowing of that ultimate act of love, Jesus breaks the bread and gives the cup as the symbols of his great love for his disciples. We read those words from Paul that had been passed on to him. Like the foot washing, he does this for Judas as well, right? Even though Judas is going to betray him, Jesus breaks the bread and serves him as well. And he serves Peter, who's going to deny him very shortly after this. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record the giving of the bread and the wine and the new meaning that Jesus gives to them. And then Paul tells the church in Corinth about that event as it had been handed down to him, as we read earlier. And rightly so, the symbols of the bread and the cup are the symbols, rather than the basin and the towel, have been handed down to us as the signs of God's love for us. You know, we have this way for us to love one another that Jesus gives in serving, but the bread and the cup, or the juice or the wine in the cup, are symbols of God's love for us. And so we are probably all glad that the sacrament which comes to us from the Last Supper is the sacrament of communion and not the sacrament of washing feet. Probably most of us are grateful for that, because we could each first Sunday of each month, and some churches celebrate communion every Sunday, wash each other's feet. And I'm seeing some heads shaking and some grinning, and you also are glad that the sacrament is what we consume, not the washing of one another's feet. Our services would feel a lot different if we celebrated the foot washing, you know, every week or first Sunday of each month. So the bread, Jesus' body broken, and the wine, the juice, symbolized really by the cup, are the symbols that are handed down to us of Jesus' love for us, of what he has done for us. That being said, let me just say briefly about the foot washing, because it is an act of service. Washing each other's feet, and really the feet of anyone who is our neighbor. Remember, Jesus defines neighbor pretty loosely when he talks about love your neighbor as yourself. Doing that is exactly what we are called to do each day. It's probably not literally washing somebody's feet, but that kind of service, the kind of loving people through tasks that may not always be real high in our list because of what the task is or because of the time it takes or because of who the people are. I mean, I don't know about you, but there's people I know that, I don't know, I just don't always like them very well, but I'm still called to love them. Some of them are in my own house. They're under my roof. And there's days I wake up, I'm like, I don't really like you, but I'm going to love you. And Jesus calls us to love them. He calls us to love them. And so that is what we are called to do, just as he stoops down to this and do this very menial task of washing their feet. It's a symbol that he gives of love put into action, and that's what we're called to do. Communion is to be a reminder and an embodiment of what Jesus Christ has done for us on the cross. And while in our Reformed theological tradition, we believe that the bread and the wine do remain bread and wine, we also believe that Jesus is present in the elements through the Holy Spirit. So communion is very much about what God has done for us in Jesus. The foot washing, however, is to remind us of what we are to do for other people every day as we serve and live in this love. We are to love others as Jesus has first loved us. So tonight, I pray, my hope and prayer is that you would be reminded of Jesus' love for you that is demonstrated in his death. And that's what Good Friday is largely about, but I find it really hard to separate the elements of communion that he gives on that night from the death the next day. So our Good Maundy Thursday service always has kind of a Good Friday feel to it as well. But I pray tonight you'd be reminded of Jesus' love for you that is demonstrated in his death, but also be inspired to love others as he does with the foot washing example that he gives. That we are called to serve those around us.